Imagine being first on scene at a community pool where a child has been pulled from the water, not breathing. Would you know what to do? For emergency medical technicians, this scenario isn't hypothetical. It's a daily reality where their knowledge and skills mean the difference between life and death. Dr. Christopher Coughlin's EMT Crash Course has become the go-to resource for EMT certification preparation, with its laser-focused approach to essential knowledge. The book has gained popularity among medical professionals and first responders nationwide, with many crediting it for their certification success. Even celebrities like Taylor Swift, who reportedly keeps a copy in her tour bus medical kit after a fan emergency, recognize its value. Beyond exam preparation, this guide has become essential reading for anyone interested in emergency medicine, from volunteer firefighters to concerned parents wanting to be prepared for the worst. The Emergency Medical Services EMS system represents the critical infrastructure that connects patients in crisis with life-saving care. This complex network comprises 14 essential components working in harmony to ensure seamless emergency response. Public access through enhanced 911 systems serves as the gateway, while clinical care protocols standardize treatment approaches. Medical direction provides oversight from physicians, and integrated health services connect EMS with hospitals and specialty care centers. Robust information systems track patient care and outcomes, while prevention initiatives aim to reduce emergencies through community outreach. When someone calls 911, emergency medical dispatchers become the first link in the chain of survival, providing critical pre-arrival instructions that can mean the difference between life and death. These dispatchers use standardized protocols to quickly assess emergencies and provide life-saving guidance, from basic CPR instructions to helping deliver babies. While most urban areas have enhanced 911 systems that automatically display caller location, cell phone calls still present location challenges, particularly in rural areas or multi-story buildings. Modern systems increasingly incorporate text-to-911 capabilities and language translation services to ensure accessibility for all communities. The National EMS Education Standards establish 4 certification levels, each building upon the previous level's foundation. Emergency medical responders, EMRs, provide immediate basic care, including bleeding control, CPR, and basic airway management. Emergency medical technicians expand on these skills, adding oxygen administration, medication assistance, and more comprehensive patient assessment. Advanced EMTs introduce advanced skills like intravenous access, additional medication administration, and advanced airway management. Paramedics represent the highest level of pre-hospital care, with extensive training in advanced cardiac monitoring, pharmacology, surgical airways, and critical care interventions. EMTs must make rapid transport decisions based on sophisticated protocols and regional resources. Stroke centers offer specialized care with immediate CT scanning and neurological expertise. Cardiac centers provide 24/7 cardiac catheterization capabilities for heart attack patients. Level 1 through 4 trauma centers offer varying degrees of surgical and critical care services. Specialized facilities include behavioral health centers for psychiatric emergencies, pediatric-specific hospitals equipped for children's unique needs, obstetric centers for high-risk pregnancies, and poison control centers providing toxicology expertise. The EMT's responsibilities encompass a vast spectrum of duties beyond patient care. Daily equipment checks ensure operational readiness, from checking drug expiration dates to testing cardiac monitors. Vehicle operations require mastery of both emergency driving and safe transport techniques. Scene management involves coordination with law enforcement, fire services, and other agencies. Patient care documentation must be thorough and accurate for both medical and legal purposes. Professional development includes continuing education, regular skills verification, and adaptation to evolving protocols. What makes this profession uniquely challenging is its unpredictable nature. As Dr. Coughlin's often quoted observation states, in class, tests follow lessons. On the street, Tests come unannounced and lessons follow. This reality drives the profession's emphasis on comprehensive preparation and continuous learning. EMTs must maintain composure while managing complex medical scenarios, dealing with environmental challenges, and facing emotional trauma. Success requires not just technical proficiency, but also emotional resilience, critical thinking under pressure, and unwavering commitment to patient advocacy. Before an EMT can save anyone else's life, they must first protect their own. This fundamental principle, that personal safety takes absolute precedence, forms the foundation of emergency medical services. The EMT's safety priorities follow a strict hierarchy. Personal safety first, followed by partner safety, patient safety, and finally, bystander safety. This isn't selfishness, it's pragmatic recognition that an injured EMT becomes another patient rather than a provider. Scene safety assessment begins when the call is received and continues until patient care is transferred. EMTs must evaluate potential hazards, including traffic, environmental conditions, violence, hazardous materials, unstable structures, and fire risks. Personal protective equipment, PPE, serves as the first line of defense, with gloves being the minimum for all patient contacts and additional protection required based on exposure risks. When transporting patients, EMTs face special challenges with certain populations. Bariatric patients require specialized equipment and additional assistance to prevent provider injury. Patients with skeletal abnormalities need special padding to prevent pressure injuries. Pregnant patients must be positioned on their left side to prevent supine hypotensive syndrome, where the fetus compresses the inferior vena cava, reducing blood return to the heart. Medical restraint represents one of the most ethically and legally complex aspects of EMT practice. It should only be employed as a last resort when patients pose an immediate threat to themselves or others. The process demands strict adherence to protocols, obtaining additional help, at least 4 people, using minimum necessary force, securing patients supine, never prone, using soft padded restraints, continuously monitoring the patient, and thoroughly documenting the entire process. The use of force doctrine requires EMTs to act reasonably, with force being protective rather than punitive. Critical safety rules include never restraining patients in prone positions, never hogtying patients, and never leaving restrained patients unsupervised. EMTs also operate within a complex legal framework. They function under their physician medical director's license and must know their state, agency, and medical director protocols. Their scope of practice outlines legally permitted actions based on certification level, not individual knowledge or experience. The standard of care refers to what a reasonable person with similar training would do in the same situation, established through national standards, state protocols, medical direction, agency policies, textbooks, and community practices. Patient consent forms the cornerstone of legal practice. Informed consent requires alertness and competency, with patients understanding all care plans and risks. Expressed consent can be verbal or nonverbal for basic procedures. Implied consent applies to unconscious or incompetent patients. Minors require parent/guardian consent except for emancipated minors. Involuntary consent applies to mentally incompetent adults or those in law enforcement custody. To provide effective emergency care, EMTs must understand the complex machine they're working with, the human body. At its core, the body strives to maintain homeostasis, a critical state of balance that every cell, tissue, organ, and system works to preserve within remarkably narrow parameters. The respiratory system provides oxygen to the body, eliminates carbon dioxide, and helps regulate pH. It divides into the upper airway, nose, mouth, nasopharynx, oropharynx, larynx, epiglottis, and lower airway, trachea, carina, bronchi, bronchioles, alveoli. The alveoli are the only respiratory structures where gas exchange occurs. Breathing involves the diaphragm, primary muscle, and intercostal muscles expanding the thoracic cavity during inhalation, active process, and relaxing during exhalation, passive process. The circulatory system includes all blood vessels, capillaries, and the heart. The heart functions as two pumps. The stronger left side receives oxygenated blood from lungs and sends it throughout the body, while the right side receives deoxygenated blood and sends it to the lungs. Blood flows from the vena cava to the right atrium, right ventricle, pulmonary arteries, lungs, where gas exchange occurs, pulmonary veins, left atrium, left ventricle, and finally to the aorta for systemic circulation. The nervous system divides into the central nervous system, CNS, and peripheral nervous system, PNS. The CNS includes the brain and spinal cord, protected by cerebrospinal fluid. The brain comprises the cerebrum, thought and memory, cerebellum, coordination, and brainstem, essential functions. The PNS includes all nerves outside the CNS and divides into sensory, information to CNS, and motor divisions. The motor division further splits into voluntary somatic and involuntary autonomic systems, with the latter having sympathetic, fight or flight, and parasympathetic, feed and breed components. The abdominal cavity houses digestive and excretory organs separated from the thoracic cavity by the diaphragm. It contains the esophagus, collapsible tube from mouth to stomach, stomach, hollow digestive organ, pancreas, aids digestion and regulates blood glucose, liver, breaks down fats, filters toxins, gallbladder, stores bile, small intestine, where most digestion and absorption occurs, large intestine, forms solid stool, appendix, spleen, filters blood, and kidneys, control fluid balance and filter waste. Understanding human development across different life stages is equally important. Infants have unfused fontanelles, are nose breathers prone to respiratory distress, and exhibit specific reflexes. Toddlers and preschoolers experience immune system development with frequent minor illnesses and rapid brain growth. School-age children undergo permanent teeth replacement and rapid musculoskeletal growth. Adolescents experience significant physical growth, puberty, and increased risk of eating disorders. Adults progress through early, 20 to 40 years, middle, 40 to 60 years, and late, over 60 years, each with specific physical changes and health considerations. Effective airway management represents the most critical skill in the EMT's arsenal. Without a patent airway and adequate ventilation, all other interventions become futile. The human body can survive for weeks without food, days without water, but only minutes without oxygen. Ventilation involves moving air in and out of the lungs, with inhalation being the active process requiring energy as the diaphragm and intercostal muscles contract to create negative pressure. Exhalation is passive, requiring no energy. Airway obstruction can be caused by the tongue, most common, fluids, swelling, or foreign bodies. Hypoxia, inadequate oxygen delivery, presents with early signs like restlessness and tachycardia, and late signs including altered consciousness and cyanosis. Assessment of breathing involves looking for chest rise and fall, listening for breathing and lung sounds, and feeling for air movement. Adequate breathing is characterized by normal respiratory rates, 12 to 20 for adults, 15 to 30 for children, 25 to 50 for infants. Non-labored breathing, adequate tidal volume, and clear bilateral lung sounds. Inadequate breathing signs include abnormal rates, nasal flaring, abnormal lung sounds, paradoxical motion, unequal chest movement, dyspnea, cyanosis, and agonal respiration. Pulse oximetry, considered the sixth vital sign, measures the percentage of hemoglobin saturated with oxygen, SaO2. Normal readings are 98% or above, with supplemental oxygen needed below 94%. While fast and non-invasive, pulse oximetry has limitations. It can't measure actual hemoglobin amounts, may be difficult to obtain in patients with hypovolemia, hypothermia, or nail polish, cannot distinguish between oxygen and carbon monoxide saturation, and may have a time delay between readings and current respiratory status. Airway management interventions include manual techniques like head tilt chin lift, preferred for unconscious patients without spine injury, and jaw thrust maneuver, for suspected C-spine injuries. Mechanical adjuncts include oropharyngeal airways, OPAs, for unresponsive patients without gag reflexes, and nasopharyngeal airways for patients with intact gag reflexes but decreased consciousness. Assisted ventilation, also called artificial or positive pressure ventilation, includes mouth-to-mask, flow-restricted oxygen-powered devices, bag valve masks, two-person preferred, and mouth-to-mouth, not preferred. It's indicated for patients with inadequate breathing from CNS injuries, airway obstructions, chest trauma, or increased airway resistance. Proper ventilation requires gentle chest rise over 1 second with rates of 10 to 12 per minute for adults, 12 to 20 for children, and 40 to 60 for newborns. Pediatric airways differ significantly from adults. They're more easily obstructed due to smaller mouths and noses and proportionally larger tongues. The pediatric head is larger relative to the body, requiring shoulder padding when supine to maintain airway alignment. Their smaller lungs mean reduced tidal volume during ventilation with higher risk of gastric distension, vomiting, and barotrauma. Hypoxia develops faster in children due to fewer oxygen reserves and higher metabolic rates. Effective patient assessment forms the cornerstone of emergency medical care, requiring both systematic methodology and adaptable thinking. The EMT approach consists of 5 essential components that flow in a logical sequence while allowing for simultaneous actions when necessary. Scene size up, primary assessment, patient history, secondary assessment, and reassessment. Scene size up begins the moment a call is received and continues as a dynamic process until patient care is transferred. EMTs must evaluate multiple factors: scene safety, with EMT safety always taking precedence, environmental hazards such as weather or hostile individuals, implementation of appropriate personal protective equipment, PPE, determining the number of patients and additional resources needed, and careful assessment of mechanism of injury, MOI, for trauma patients, or nature of illness, NOI, for medical patients. For instance, in a motor vehicle collision, EMTs evaluate vehicle damage patterns, displacement distance, and intrusion into passenger spaces to anticipate potential injuries. The primary assessment identifies and treats immediately life-threatening conditions through a structured approach. It begins with forming a general impression, those crucial first seconds where EMTs observe the patient's age, sex, position, obvious distress signals, and overall appearance. Level of consciousness assessment employs the AVPU scale: alert, fully aware, responsive to voice, responds to verbal stimuli, responsive to pain, responds only to painful stimuli, or unresponsive. For unresponsive patients, the CAB approach prioritizes circulation, checking pulses, initiating CPR if needed, airway, assessing patency, managing obstruction, and breathing, evaluating rate and quality, providing ventilation support when necessary. Patient history gathering requires both art and science, beginning with identifying the chief complaint, the patient's most significant concern, in their own words. The sample history framework provides crucial background: signs, symptoms, what the patient is experiencing, allergies, medications, environmental, food, medications, prescribed, over-the-counter, supplements, past medical history, chronic conditions, surgeries, hospitalizations, last oral intake, timing and nature of food drink, and events leading to injury illness. Complete sequence of relevant events. EMTs must master different questioning techniques: open-ended questions, can you describe your chest pain, encourage detailed responses but require more time, while closed-ended questions, did the pain start suddenly, provide quick, specific information, crucial in time-sensitive situations. The secondary assessment systematically identifies remaining signs, conditions, or injuries without delaying critical transport. This may involve either a comprehensive head-to-toe examination or a focused assessment targeting specific body areas based on the chief complaint. Assessment techniques include careful inspection, looking for visible abnormalities, palpation, feeling for tenderness, deformities, or abnormal movement, and auscultation, listening to breath sounds, heart tones. Baseline vital signs establish initial patient status with subsequent measurements every 15 minutes for stable patients or every 5 minutes for unstable patients. Vital signs provide both quantitative measurements and qualitative observations essential for patient assessment. Standard vital signs include detailed evaluation of respirations, rate, depth, effort, sounds, pulse, rate, rhythm, strength, equality, blood pressure, systolic, diastolic readings, trends, pupils, size, equality, reactivity to light, skin signs, color, temperature, moisture, turgor, and pulse oximetry readings. Each vital sign offers specific diagnostic clues. For example, skin signs can indicate shock, carbon monoxide poisoning, or cyanosis. Reassessment represents ongoing vigilance, occurring at regular intervals, every 5 minutes for unstable patients, every 15 minutes for stable patients, and after any significant interventions or changes in patient condition. This systematic reevaluation includes reassessment of level of consciousness, airway status, breathing effectiveness, circulatory status, response to interventions, and trending vital signs. Documentation of these reassessments provide crucial information about patient response to treatment and condition changes during transport. Emergency medical care often focuses on conditions where rapid intervention makes the difference between life and death. Understanding these critical situations and their appropriate management is essential for every EMT. Shock represents inadequate tissue perfusion, where cells don't receive needed oxygen and nutrients. It progresses through 3 stages: compensated shock, body still able to compensate through increased heart rate and vasoconstriction; decompensated shock, body can no longer compensate, blood pressure falls; and irreversible shock, final fatal stage. The 4 main types include cardiogenic shock, heart can't pump effectively; obstructive shock, mechanical obstruction of the heart; distributive shock, widespread vasodilation causing blood pooling; and hypovolemic shock, fluid loss problem. Cardiac emergencies encompass conditions caused by myocardial ischemia, poor blood supply, including angina pectoris and acute myocardial infarction. Angina typically occurs during physical activity or stress, resolves with rest, oxygen, or nitroglycerin within 10 minutes, and doesn't cause permanent cardiac damage. MI involves death of myocardial muscle due to lack of oxygenated blood flow through coronary arteries. Unlike angina, MI pain typically lasts longer than a few minutes, can occur at rest, and may not respond to rest, oxygen, or nitroglycerin. Stroke, cerebrovascular accident, CVA, or brain attack, is death to brain tissue from interrupted blood flow. Ischemic strokes, the vast majority, occur from blockages, often due to atherosclerosis. Hemorrhagic strokes involve bleeding within the brain, limiting intervention options and often proving fatal. Symptoms include severe headache, slurred speech, facial droop, drooling, unilateral numbness, weakness or paralysis, altered consciousness, difficulty moving, walking, and vision problems. Diabetic emergencies stem from disruptions in the body's energy metabolism system. Hypoglycemia occurs when blood glucose drops below 60 mg per deciliter with symptoms or below 50 mg per deciliter regardless of symptoms. It develops rapidly, causing altered mental status, seizures, and potentially brain death. Hyperglycemia develops more slowly, with diabetic ketoacidosis typically showing blood glucose above 350 mg per deciliter, Kussmaul respirations, polydipsia, polyphagia, polyuria, fruity breath odor, and tachycardia. Anaphylaxis is a severe, life-threatening systemic allergic reaction that impairs airway, respiratory, and cardiovascular systems. It involves an excessive immune response to allergens, causing upper and lower airway swelling, bronchoconstriction, vasodilation, hypotension, increased capillary permeability, and mucus production. Common triggers include medications, environmental triggers, foods, insect bites and stings, and latex. Trauma represents one of the leading causes of death across all age groups. Understanding the mechanism of injury, MOI, and kinematics of trauma helps EMTs predict injury patterns and develop an index of suspicion. The equation for kinetic energy, 1/2 mass x velocity squared, emphasizes velocity's outsized role in trauma severity. Motor vehicle collisions present various injury patterns. Head-on collisions can cause occupants to go over under the dash, resulting in head, spine, chest, and extremity injuries. Rear impacts often cause cervical spine hyperextension. Lateral impacts produce injuries along the impact side. Rollovers have unpredictable patterns with high ejection risk, and rotational spins increase C-spine injury risk. The three collisions concept includes vehicle striking object, passenger striking interior or restraints, and internal organs striking body structures. Bleeding can be managed with direct pressure, elevation, tourniquets for uncontrolled hemorrhage, and hemostatic agents where tourniquets can't be used. Five basic interventions for bleeding with shock are direct pressure, high flow oxygen, placing patient supine, preventing heat loss, and high priority transport. Burn injuries are assessed by five factors of severity: depth of burn, superficial, first degree, partial thickness, second degree, or full thickness, third degree, percentage of body surface area affected, calculated using rule of nines or palm method, burns to critical areas, respiratory tract, hands, face, feet, genitalia, associated trauma or pre-existing conditions, and patient age. Under 5 or over 55 years are at greater risk. Head injuries encompass trauma to the scalp, skull, or brain. Skull fractures indicate potential brain injury and include linear fractures, most common, no deformity, depressed fractures, palpable, with increased brain injury risk, and basal skull fractures, at skull base, with CSF leakage, battle sign, and raccoon eyes. Brain injuries include concussions, temporary disruption with improving symptoms, cerebral contusions with edema and decreasing mental status, and various types of intracranial bleeding. Spinal trauma occurs through various mechanisms: flexion, forward head movement, extension, backward movement, compression, head against body, rotation, side-to-side movement, distraction, stretching, lateral bending, and penetrating injuries. Spinal column injuries typically produce pain or tenderness, while cord injuries cause motor deficits and sensory deficits. Transected cords result in paralysis below injury level, loss of bowel or bladder control, and possible respiratory arrest with high cervical injuries. Emergency medical care must be adapted to meet the specific needs of different patient populations. Understanding these variations ensures appropriate assessment and intervention for all patients. Pediatric patients require specialized knowledge of anatomical and physiological differences. Children have unique features requiring special consideration: proportionally larger tongues with little room for swelling, smaller airways easily obstructed, and many infants are obligate nose breathers. Their proportionally larger heads increase risk of head trauma and heat loss, with fontanelles providing diagnostic clues. They're primarily abdominal breathers with less protected organs. Children metabolize oxygen and glucose faster than adults and have greater skin surface area relative to mass, increasing hypothermia risk. The Pediatric Assessment Triangle, PAT, provides a rapid visual assessment framework to identify high-priority patients within 30 seconds through evaluation of appearance, work of breathing, and circulation to skin. This visual assessment should take only about 30 seconds to identify high-priority patients requiring rapid intervention. Geriatric patients present unique challenges due to their complex medical histories and physiological vulnerabilities. When treating geriatric patients, clear communication is essential. Speak directly to them, not about them, using one question at a time and allowing extra response time. Their complex medical histories often include hypertension, heart disease, and diabetes, which can complicate even minor conditions. Trauma assessment requires heightened suspicion, as even minor mechanisms like ground-level falls can cause severe injuries due to physiological changes. Pregnant patients experience numerous physiological changes. The uterus requires more blood and displaces internal structures. Respiratory rate increases with significantly higher oxygen demand. Cardiac workload increases with faster heart rate. Blood volume increases, causing relative anemia. Shock signs are masked. Postural hypotension becomes common. Digestive and urinary changes occur, and the center of gravity shifts, increasing fall risk. Any maternal injury threatens the fetus, yet pregnancy masks typical shock symptoms. Patients with special challenges require adapted communication and care approaches. For hearing-impaired patients, face them directly. Speak clearly, consider written communication, and use closed-ended questions. With vision-impaired patients, verbally communicate all actions, keep them informed about surroundings, and protect them during movement. Speech-impaired patients require patience. Ask concise questions, allow extra response time, avoid finishing their statements, and be honest when you don't understand them. Understanding these population-specific considerations allows EMTs to provide more effective, compassionate care tailored to each patient's unique needs. This adaptability represents the hallmark of truly exceptional emergency medical care.